Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us, and enjoy the show.
For tuning into the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you from the wonderfully cozy studio in the back of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and you are listening to Good Food, the show where we talk with people who are using food as a vehicle for social good. I'm your host, Daniel Meyer, and I am thrilled today to be joined by Stacey Ornstein, the founder of a project called Allergic to Salad, which is a great name, and it's a project that teaches kids and maybe even adults, I think, but we'll get into that in a second, how to cook and how to appreciate healthy food. I'm especially happy to have Stacey here in studio because my last handful of interviews for this show have been done over the phone, and it is really a pleasure to be able to do this face-to-face for a change. Also, there were just torrential downpours in New York, and Stacey trudged here from Astoria, and she's also very pregnant, so she's really a hero for being here, even though she says she isn't. So, Stacey, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Of course. My pleasure. So, I wanted to ask you first off, I already alluded to the great name of your project called Allergic to Salad. Where'd that come from? How'd you settle on it? What does it mean?
Yeah, my students get all the credit. And maybe it's not even just my students. It's probably half the population of kids in this country or in the world where we'll be working with greens somehow, whether we're making a salad or not. Usually we're not making a salad, and they see green set up on the table ready for them to cook with, and they're just automatically on autopilot with, oh, I'm allergic to salad. I can't have that. I can't have it. I don't want to eat it. I don't want to cook with it. I don't want any part of it. So it's just a matter of working through the fear.
That's pretty smart of them to say automatically that they're allergic to it. That's a smart out for them. Have they ever tried these things before? That's just how they do it.
That's just how they do it. And usually, well, my response usually when they say I'm allergic to salad, I can't have it. And I say, you know, it's too bad because we're going to be making a chocolate salad next week. So it looks like you won't be able to have that either. And then they usually turn around and they're like, oh, I'm not allergic to salad. I'm just kidding. But it's just so interesting. It's, you know, in this day and age of all these allergies, and obviously there are some that are very serious, and I definitely am aware of allergies. And so it's not to put any of them down or to make fun of any of them, but it's just the reaction is so constant and so in my face so often in my work.
Yeah.
So that's where it came from.
So let's back up for a second. How did you get into starting to teach kids how to cook? What's the structure of these classes like? How does it work?
Yeah. My degree is in education. I was originally working in children's art education. And I was working in the art education field, and I was just watching sort of what a lot of these... I was working with teenagers at the time, and I was watching what they were eating. And I was also in charge of ordering the food. And at that point, when I had made the transition to move to New York... I was actually quite overweight in high school. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to New York and sort of started walking a lot and buying food on my own, was when I made my own transition, my own personal transition. And then watching these kids and being told to order pizza or burgers for them every day for lunch. And I just kept saying, can't we just get anything else or like some apples for a snack?
Yeah.
And the reaction was always, they're not going to eat it. So just don't even bother. And I was just like, you're not even giving them a chance to try it, you know? And I was so appalled. I quit that. And I was saying to you earlier, I emailed Mark Bittman, and I was like, I need to work in food, and I'll intern for you. I don't need to get paid. I'll do anything. Let me work for you. And funny enough, he was actually hiring, and I got to work on 404 recipes. And then from there, I sort of parlayed into another nonprofit that I'm currently part-time program director of.
What's that nonprofit?
That is Spoons Across America. They also do some great work in public schools, free education for food and nutrition education for public school kids around New York City. But yeah, and then from there, I was like, I just really want to get in the classroom again and work with kids one-on-one, or not necessarily one-on-one, but hands-on cooking. And I felt like that's really where the change was. And from there is where I started to get into after-school programs and develop my own programming and do hands-on cooking classes with mostly kids, but I do some adult classes.
So you started teaching sort of impromptu after-school classes, and then it just kept snowballing, and now you have a full-blown curriculum. It's not a school, but it's not a school.
I guess I'm sort of in the process of creating a nonprofit.
Fantastic.
I'm currently umbrellaed under IOBY.org, and I can accept tax deductible donations through their website. So maybe, you know, I'm looking, I would love to have an actual physical classroom someday. Waiting for that donation of space to happen.
So where do the classes currently take place?
The classes are sort of anywhere that, and anyone that has space that they want to donate. So I keep my costs as low as possible because they're free cooking classes.
I was going to say none of the kids pay anything, but they probably wouldn't anyway. None of the parents
they
or anybody
pay in
have
rocks.
To.
Yeah, well, the ones that I do, the public classes that I do, those are all free. You know, there's definitely some private classes that people call me up for, and those I'll get paid through. But the free public classes that I offer are all free, and I sort of manage that by raising funds, and then once the funds are raised, I can host a class. And they're hosted. I go into restaurants that have either private sort of dining areas that aren't in use at the time, or I slide into restaurants either before service or between service.
That's great.
I have a lot of chefs who will lead the classes. I have a partnership with two restaurants in Astoria, Vesta Trattoria and Pachanga Patterson, and they actually do a chef-led class for me the last Saturday of every month, and then for a week after, the dish that the kids have made is featured on their menu, and we run a fundraiser for that week. And that's one of my largest fundraising sources right now. And so 100% of the proceeds of every appetizer that's ordered comes back to Allergic to Salad.
Wow.
And pays for educators and curriculum development and all that stuff that needs to happen.
That's so great.
Yeah, I've also done in New York City green markets, in libraries, sort of wherever there's space where people want us in.
So if there's any little kids listening right now or their parents, where can people go to find you to sign up for a class?
You can go to allergictosalad.com. Okay. We've got our calendar up. I also have a Facebook page, which is /allergictosaladny. I'm on Twitter. I've got all the social media.
Okay, good.
Social media going on.
So you mentioned that you used to work with Mark Bittman working on a cookbook. What's the main difference between developing recipes for a grown-up cookbook and developing recipes for little kids that you're trying to teach how to cook?
I'd like to say there's not much difference. I mean, I really don't believe in kids' menus.
Right.
I think kids should be eating, you know, the same thing that adults are eating, just smaller portions, sort of. So when I'm developing there are some things, like, obviously it's like they can't take like very spicy spices, or they need to sort of build up an enjoyment of some of these like more powerful spices like cumin or coriander or something,
yeah,
or cloves. So I think just doing a slow introduction of those and sort of, you know, it's like you're weaning anyone into sort of the broader world of food and flavor. And so when I'm developing recipes, we do a lot of really crazy international stuff. I mean, we've made gazpacho, we've made vegetable dumplings. This weekend we're making some sukkah or chickpea pancakes with like a shredded carrot salad. And I get parents come up to me all the time and they're like, you know, this is like adult food. Like,
I happen to know that the chickpea pancake is one of Mark Bittman's favorite recipes. So.
Oh, it's such a good recipe. I mean, it's so easy. But yeah, I mean, it's like, it's so basic, and it's just like, well, if you just like, you know, allow them the chance to eat it, you know. And when we made gazpacho, the funny thing was, we made gazpacho in one class, and my student was like, you know, this is, one of my students was like, this is so familiar. I think my mom makes this for my dad on Saturdays in the summer. And I was like, well, you've never had it? And it was like, no, I eat like the chicken fingers. And so
the kids are getting special.
They're getting special meals.
Special kids' meals at home.
So then we made the gazpacho in class. The student went home and told her parents that she made gazpacho in class. She ended up making it for her family that weekend. And then she came back to class the next week and she's like, I've been making it all weekend. I made it 3 days in a row.
Wow.
You know, we've been eating it together now. And so I think it's just sort of giving kids that chance to eat it and maybe simplifying a recipe a little. But for the most part, they should be... I really believe they should be eating the same thing.
So is that that sort of situation that you describe where the parents are eating one thing and the kids are eating another? Is that sort of a common scenario that you find at home? Like, what are the kids' situations at home in terms of food for the most part? Do their parents cook? Do they cook at all? Are they eating junk food?
Yeah, it's like New York City, so it's totally varied, you know?
Right.
Like, even within, like, one neighborhood, I'll have, like, one kid who's like, my favorite food is sushi. And like, I'm a vegan. And then you go like in the same neighborhood and, you know, the other student is like bringing in packaged meals or something, or, you know, is just eating frozen chicken fingers every day. So it's all over the place. But one of the things that I've noticed, you know, I've done like green market tours or farmers market tours with kids. And it's like to walk around and it's like you have a student who says like, I've never eaten a strawberry, or like, I've never eaten an apple. And it's sort of like, what? Like, you know, it's like, first of all, apples are like served to you in school. But it's like for a school child to actually say, it's like, I've never eaten an apple. Like, I've never even tried it. It's sort of scary. But yeah, they're all over the place. You know, there's probably a lot of parents making special meals or just frozen dinners. But then there's definitely a lot of kids that I see that cook a lot at home. And
so if parents are trying to sort of raise... You know, obviously they're trying to raise healthy kids who are, you know, well, into cooking or not, but at least good eaters. What's the most common mistake that parents will make when they're trying to, I don't know, cook with their kids or raise kids who are into cooking or at least who are willing to eat vegetables?
I think the hardest thing when working with kids cooking is to realize that it's going to take longer. Right? It's like you can have a 5-ingredient dish and it's going to take you an hour to make with right. a kid, whereas depending on the age, whereas it's like if you made it yourself, it'll take, you know, 10 minutes. But also just like giving them a chance to fail. I think it's like a lot of parents are almost afraid to see their child fail. And, you know, it's like one of the first things I teach my students is how to crack an egg. And parents, you know, with kids as young as 3 years old, I'm doing this. And parents start freaking out and it's like, no, they can't do it, just let me do it. And it's like, no, it's like, I have extra eggs, it's okay.
Yeah.
If shells get in, we can pick the shells out, or if it explodes everywhere, you know, all right, you have to do some laundry, but you're gonna have to do the laundry anyway. So I think just allowing children the chance to fail and having the opportunity to try is the most important thing when cooking with kids.
A few years ago, I did sort of some similar work. I just volunteered a few days a week and helped teach little kids how to cook, and I think they were making frittata or something like that. And, you know, we told all of them to crack the egg on the table and crack it into the bowl. And this kid, he was probably 5 years old. He just takes his egg and he turns right to the kid next to him and he cracks it right over his head. Have there been any hilarious things that these kids do in your class?
Oh, man. I mean, it's like working with kids. It's like every day is like there's something hilarious that they're saying or they're doing. I try very hard very early on once we get the egg in the hand that it's like a slow walkthrough process of that very first time of how to actually crack the egg. So it's not just go crack an egg, because a lot of them don't really know what that means. But one of like, I had literally yesterday, like one of the sweetest things that one of my students said, he was like, cooking is magical. And I was like, well, what do you mean it's magical? And he's like, well, you can take these four random things and you can combine them and it turns into something totally delicious. And I was just like, you, like, can be my spokesperson.
That's probably like, the most eloquent endorsement of cooking that I've ever heard.
Yeah,
that I've
a
ever
fourth
heard.
Grader. I was very surprised.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. So he was, I was just like, oh, it's magical. You're amazing.
So when I did this sort of stuff, obviously I'm not still doing it. And one of the reasons is because these kids just like totally wore me out. Like they ran me ragged. Do you feel exhausted when you're done with them? Or is this just like a breeze for you?
Maybe I have a high tolerance. I don't know. I mean, definitely when I have like multiple back-to-back classes with no break in between, that is definitely exhausting. But for the most part, I mean, it's just, there's always something going on in the class that, makes me smile or makes me laugh, or they'll say something. So that sort of makes it worth it. Or their reactions, or, you know, it's like, I get a hug after class, or, you know, it's, you know, for every five kids that say whatever we cooked was disgusting, it's like, you know, there's one that comes back the next week and is like, I made it at home and it was awesome. And like, we've been, you know, following the cookbook and making it, you know, every day since, or something like that. So, or, you know, I want to make this for Mother's Day or for Father's Day.
Wow.
So when they come back and they tell me that, or when the parents come back and they're like, you know, I could never get her or him to eat like pumpkin soup, and now we're eating your pumpkin soup recipe every day.
That's got to feel good.
Yeah, it's awesome. So that's sort of, I guess, why I stick to it.
That's great. Okay, we've been talking with Stacey Ornstein of Allergic to Salad. We need to take a quick break. But when we get back, we'll jump in and talk a little bit more about her classes and sort of the larger implications of being a kid in an eating kid in America. Stay tuned. I just want to tell everyone
a little thing you want to know. This song is called Thank You by the California Honey Drops. You're listening to Good Food on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Well, you did something to me. You woke me up into a dream. So sweet. Well, I just really want to thank you. And I've never felt this way before.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
We are back. You're listening to Good Food on the Heritage Radio Network. We've been talking with Stacey Ornstein, the founder of a project called Allergic to Salad, where they teach little kids how to cook healthy food and really how to eat healthy food and say that they're no longer allergic to it. So we've been talking a little bit about sort of the specifics of your program and the things you cook with the kids and, you know, who they are and what they like and what they'll eat. I wanted to talk a little bit sort of more broadly about what it's like to be a kid. Not that you know, but sort of the environment. The
I sort of remember what it's like to be a kid.
Okay, well, then you can draw on your experience for sure. You know, it's a tough environment to be a healthy kid and grow into a healthy adult, you know, food-wise. There's a ton of different obstacles that get in the way between kids and having a healthy diet and a healthy life. I'm wondering what some of those challenges are that you may have come across in, you know, in the work teaching these kids who may have you know, different backgrounds, some healthier and some less so, and also in your other work with Spoons Across America and other, you know, working in public schools.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's hard. It's when the media is totally saturated with, and not even just the media, but the schools and like your friends and, you know, all over the place. It's like grocery stores. There's so little good stuff, you know, out there that it's really, I think, has to start at home. I mean, I would love to see subsidies in this country change so that we don't have like 90% of the stuff, if not more, on grocery store shelves full of not food. So the subsidies
change from what to what?
You know, no more corn and soy subsidies and move it towards real food that people are eating. You know, it's like no one's funding broccoli.
Yeah.
Why can't we fund broccoli?
Why can't we fund broccoli?
You know, so I think that's a big thing. But, you know, it's like money talks, unfortunately. But I, you know, so it has to start at home. It's really hard when I'm working with kids who it's like are eating, you know, and kids already have very particular palates. You have some kids who it's like they only want to eat white things, or it's like they only want to eat brown things.
Right.
So just getting them out of that comfort zone. And I mean, I totally rely on peer pressure in class, and that's sort of almost why I prefer not to have parents around, because it's like when you have everyone in class or even just half the class saying like, oh, this is so good, that kid who only wants to eat white things and it's sitting in front of them is more willing to try it. And even if they throw it away, you know, it's like what I say to my students, I'm like, you just have to try it, but you don't have to like it. And so I think just the more they try it, and what I say to them also, it's like, you know, you might not like a tomato, but maybe you just haven't found the form you like that tomato in. So maybe it's like a texture for some kids, or maybe it's a color thing. So maybe they need like yellow tomatoes, or maybe they need grape tomatoes and not beefsteak tomatoes, or maybe they need gazpacho or salsa rather than like a whole fresh tomato. So it's playing around and seeing what it is. I think I sort of detracted from... away from your question a little, but
no, that's good. Well, how do you think these kids get stuck in sort of the white food, brown food, yellow food ruts? Is it just because kids have sensitive palates and are picky eaters? Is it because that's all their parents are choosing to give them? Is it because some of their parents don't have access to food that's greener and better? Sort of why does it start?
There's definitely an issue of not, especially in New York City, there's definitely issues of food deserts, you know, of communities that don't have access to the good, healthy fruits and vegetables that they need. There's, you know, and then there's an education of just, well, what to do with it when you have it. And it takes time to sort of understand how flavors can come together. And it takes a willingness to like learn how to cook. And unfortunately, it's something that I think a lot of us have lost with like the increase of convenience food.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of like one of the things that I try to do is, you know, it's like, well, like, let's get back into the kitchen. Just even if we're learning basic things, you know, that's all you need. And once you have this understanding of sort of how flavors can combine, you don't need cookbooks anymore. You know, you can just open your refrigerator and it's like, all right, I've got X, Y, and Z, and how am I going to combine those to make something that I can eat in 10 minutes?
From a former cookbook writer to now saying we don't need cookbooks anymore. Yeah.
I still enjoy my cookbooks.
I agree. That's really the goal of a good cookbook, should be to, you know, make you less reliant on it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's, I mean, for me now, it's like cookbooks are almost like inspiration. Like I'll look at pictures, and it's like, ooh, you know, like it'll give me an idea for something and it's totally not what is pictured. But it gives me an idea of like how something can fit together. But yeah, I mean, I think just, and I think also it's like kids aren't picky eaters unless you tell them they're picky eaters.
Right.
So it's like, if they've never heard that word before, they, you know, it's like, they won't know that they're a picky eater. But it's like, once you say, oh, well, you're just a picky eater, then they have that excuse in their arsenal for the rest of their life. Of saying like, well, I'm just a picky eater, so I don't want to eat it.
Right. Or if you take away their crutches, then they're just going to eat food and love it, I guess.
Exactly. So
you mentioned earlier that you started out in arts education.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you've noticed any similarities or differences between teaching teaching art and teaching cooking? Did they both sort of stick the earlier that you get to kids, or are there any, you know, I've always thought that sort of food and art share a lot of things in common. I'm wondering if teaching them
I think cooking is like an art form almost. But you know, I mean, I think you can, it, you know, it's definitely, I feel like for me personally, it's easier to work with the younger you are, it's the easier it is to open up, their experience, and they're not as closed off, and they're not as eager to say, no, I don't like this. They're more willing to try it. But you know, it's like, as long as you have that willingness to learn, you know, anyone can go from not knowing anything to being a great cook. And it's like what they say is like Julia Child didn't go to culinary school until she was like in her 40s.
Right.
And then like, look what happened. So, I mean, she was cooking before, but you know, anyone can become a great cook, and you can start whenever. You just have to have that willingness. And I have parents that come up to me and say, like, you know, my kids are taking your class and now they're better cooks than me. Like, I have to take some adult classes. Like,
that makes them want to get better.
Yeah. You know, it's like they see that they don't have to just cook the same thing every, you know, the one dish they know how to make, or, you know, they want to learn how to make more stuff. So I think as long as there's that willingness there.
What's the age range of the kids that you teach? And is there sort of a progression or a regression? I remember when I dabbled in this, the younger kids were a treat for me, and the older ones were just like a total nightmare. They really kicked my butt. Is there a...
Well, as I said, the older they get, the more ready they are to say no. But you know, I mean, I've worked with kids as young as 2 years old cooking. And I mean, I do all the same recipes. I just sort of will simplify them a little, or maybe I'll do a little bit more prep.
What can a 2 year old cook?
We've made gazpacho.
Wow.
I have these great little handheld blenders. So they sort of half cut everything and then we put them in the blender. And they loved it. They thought it was like amazing.
And they you give them knives, obviously not super sharp ones.
I
but
have like these nylon kid safe knives that I use. They're recommended for like ages 4 and up, but you know, it's a recommendation.
Hopefully no one's listening.
But you know, it's like I give them soft vegetables and some kid safe knives, and they're using them. And you know, I've got friends with young kids who've picked up the knives, and they're like, they're great. You know, it's like my kids want to cook so much more. And you know, it's like, kids love, you know, sharp things, even if they're not really that sharp. You know, they're sharp enough to cut. They're not really sharp enough to cut them. But, you know, if a kid does get hurt in my class, I'm like, well, now you're a real chef because, you know, you've had the battle wounds of cooking. We've made gazpacho. We've made spinach gnocchi with 2 and 3 year olds. So, and I do that with, you know, all the way up to like my middle schoolers. I make the same thing.
Well, next time I mess up my gnocchi recipe, I'll just think about the 2 year old who's rolling gnocchi in your classroom in Astoria.
Well, they're not really rolling it. They're more pinching it off. It looks a little more like spetzel almost. So,
hey,
but we're calling it gnocchi. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we have a few minutes left. So I wanted to get to a question which I sort of asked somebody, and I asked my guests in one form or another each time. You know, you started in education, and there's a lot of different ways that you could have chosen to sort of reach kids and interact with them and promote their well-being and health and growth. What is it about food that's a particularly appealing way for you to relate to kids? Why is it a particularly effective tool for doing so?
Yeah, I mean, we all have to eat, right? So I think that's sort of, it's something that everyone has to do. It's something that everyone can relate to. And I think that's, for me, I mean, I came from a family where we had, you know, homemade meals on the table most nights of the week. And I was cooking when I was 2 years old. I've got a picture of myself, like, pulled up to a countertop on a chair. And then when my mom got tired of taking care of all the meals, it was like, all right, now my brothers and I each had our night in the kitchen.
Really?
Where we were responsible, yeah.
How old were you when you started that?
That was probably like 8 or 9, I would say.
Pretty good.
And so it was, we had to like develop a meal with her. And I mean, it was like spaghetti, you know, but it was, you know, we were cooking and she, you know, she didn't have to. So, but yeah.
Like why, no, you're answering it. Like yeah. why food is a great way for you to interact with little kids.
So I just feel like, I mean, it was so much a part of my life and it's a part of everyone's lives, right? Everyone has to eat.
Yeah.
And I think that's just where it came from for me was, this passion that I had and seeing people that I felt like, you know, I was like, people are missing out so much that, you know, it's like that don't appreciate food and you don't have to spend hours in the kitchen. You know, as I said, it's like, it can be 10 minutes, but, just like having that knowledge and having that power, is really empowering, and sets you up for life and, you know, and you save money and, you know, there's so many benefits and it's like your health is better and it's just sort of like a snowball effect of when you know how to cook and, when you just know a few things in the kitchen, it can really do so much other good.
So in the wise words of your student, cooking is magical.
Cooking is magical.
It is. Well, you know, no better place to end than that. We're out of time. I want to thank you, Stacey, so much for being here.
Thank you for having
me. Everybody, it's Stacey Ornstein, allergic to salad. She's got cooking classes in Astoria, and from what we've heard today, they sound incredible. You have been listening to Good Food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Daniel Meyer. And before I go, I want to remind you that May is our membership pledge drive month. Heritage Radio Network relies on your support to continue our programming. So if you would be so kind and generous, go to the website, click on the donate tab. We would really, really appreciate it. Thank you in advance for your support. And I'll talk to you again in a few weeks on the next episode of Good Food.
All the good times that we shared.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.